On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
And welcome, 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 dear listeners. So before we actually start with today's particular program, dear listeners, do remember that even though the Wednesday edition or the day of Wednesday ultimately has begun in earnest in terms of today's the Villager e-paper platform in terms of its availability. If you have not consulted it as yet, do have a look, do have a gander. And ultimately, if you're not part of the subscription process, you can always join in terms of it following the necessary process a little bit later. But before that, we take a short break and come back after it. Welcoming you to this Wednesday edition specifically of the On the Radar session specifically here on your number one talk radio station, dear listeners. And ultimately, as you join us on your drive time lunchtime session, that's obviously between the time frame of 1 to 2:30 here on your number one talk radio station of Iglem. Ultimately, we bring you the up-to-date developments that have taken place in the past hours, as well as also leading in from the previous day as well. And before we ultimately just start off with today's particular program, just citing specifically to you that you can listen to us on the Eagle FM application, the Eagle FM website, which you can obviously just Google search and access through your regular browser. Just remember to search for Eagle FM Namibia and ultimately enable the play button or sometimes an audio button. That is crucial in terms of ultimately listening to your favorite programming during the course of the day. Second on to that is also do remember that in terms of the Eagle FM application, you can enjoy it anytime, any place in terms of download. It is free to download from the Google Play Store or the Apple function or the Apple platform. And remember to always access it in terms of getting your regular updates and favorite programming on the go. Alternatively, there's always your mainstay radio signal or frequency that you can always access across the country. Do consult our frequency map that we've got on the Eagle FM and the Villager social media platforms. Just have a look in terms of where your locality is. Access the particular map and ultimately tune into your favorite frequency. Also, just to cite, dear listeners, we do know that there has been particularly issues with frequency connection in various vicinities. There is always the Eagle FM application, which is the alternative in terms of if you've lost frequency due to the inclement weather that might be persisting in your locality, you can always switch over to the digital connection. Starting off in earnest with today's program, dear listeners, we take a look specifically at the announcement coming through from the Bank of Namibia. We take a look specifically at a role played by FNB and LIFA in terms of promoting safe travel. We take a look specifically at the developments coming through in terms of research and combating of climate change through the implementation of research projects, as a contribution coming through from the Deputy Minister of Agriculture, Ruth Masake, has highlighted in a recent discussion. We also take a look specifically at the engagement coming through from the National Assembly, wherein the Deputy Minister of Education, that being Dino Balotti, indicated specifically his ministry's continued endeavors in the realms of an entrepreneurial development, as well as also taking a look at sport and innovation research in all four of those particular categories. And finally, we take a look specifically at the contribution that the Vice President, that being Lucia Witbooi, made at a recent Windhoek engagement that was centered upon the discussions of justice for Africans and people of African descent through reparations, which is particularly some of the subject matter in terms of women's leadership in specifically seeking reparative justice and restorative justice in the African continent. And that ultimately, dear listeners, starts us off with the first particular indication, that being that the Bank of Namibia has decided to maintain the current repo rate at 6.75%. Now, this is as the Central Bank Governor, Johannes Kavachap, made this announcement earlier this morning, as the Monetary Policy Committee has observed the various developments that are feeding the uncertainty that is reigning across the global trade landscape and the occurrence of geopolitical strains. Now, the current repo rate will be active until June 2025. citing the various parts of the U.S. and the global powers in response to the punitive trade measures that are still active in the world and which is currently on a 90-day pause. And this is while the world's two largest economies are trading blows in tariff pile-ons. The central bank has noted that some decent growth was witnessed before these particular developments kicked off. That is at the start of 2025. We take a listen to what the central bank governor, that is Johannes Gavachap, had to say earlier today.
Thank you very much, Nofiko. Good morning and welcome. We meet at a time of significant global uncertainty. We see a fragmented geoeconomic landscape defined by tension, competition, protectionism. We notice dislocations in bond markets. We see gyrations in equity markets. And these highlight the fragility of sentiment and the ease with which confidence can be undermined. So it's quite a lot of uncertainty that we see. But let me get back to the monetary policy statement. On the 14th and 15th of April 2025, the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of Namibia held its second bi-monthly meeting of the year to decide on the appropriate monetary policy stance for the next 2 months. To continue safeguarding the peg between the Namibia dollar and the South African rand while supporting the domestic economy amid heightened global policy uncertainty, the MPC unanimously decided to keep the repo rate unchanged at 6.75%. This decision was reached following a comprehensive review of current and expected domestic, regional and global economic developments. Let us consider developments locally that has informed the decision. Domestic economic growth was experienced in 2024 and continued during the first 2 months of 2025. Despite a recent uptick, domestic inflation appeared to be well contained. Growth in private sector credit extension, PSC, remained subdued and broadly unchanged since the previous MPC meeting. The merchandise trade deficit improved and the stock of international reserves remained sufficient to maintain the currency peg and meet the country's international financial obligations. Real gross domestic product expanded at a solid pace of 3.7% in 2024, albeit slower compared to 4.4% in 2023. The moderation was attributed to a contraction recorded in the primary industries, particularly in the diamond mining subsector. The activity in the domestic economy expanded further during the first 2 months of 2025 relative to the corresponding period in 2024.
Now, still staying on the particular announcement that the central bank governor, Johannes Gavachap, had outlined there, the governor also noted specifically that expansion on the details of the of Namibia's particular ability to meet its commitments in terms of payments for international trade and the exposure of the primary sector's particular impact on the potential performance of the country in the months to come. Let's have a listen to what he still had further to say.
The positive performance was driven by the mining, tourism, wholesale and retail trade, communication, transport, and construction sectors. Real gross domestic product growth for 2025 is estimated to be around 3.5% to 4%, slightly weaker compared to the forecast we gave you during the previous MPC meeting. Downside risks to the outlook have intensified, primarily driven by elevated global policy uncertainty and escalating trade wars. Other notable external risks include geopolitical tensions and the sustained depressed international diamond prices. Internally, delays in the upgrading and rehabilitation of infrastructure, challenges following the recent drain-induced damage, the outbreaks of animal health diseases, and water supply interruptions, particularly in coastal towns, may pose downside risks to the domestic outlook. Inflation in Namibia averaged 3.7% during the first quarter of 2025, relative to 5% in the corresponding period in 2024. The slowdown in inflation was primarily ascribed to lower housing and transport inflation. However, the domestic disinflationary process has started reversing since the last MPC meeting. Inflation edged up to 4.2% in March 2025 compared to 3.2% recorded in January 2025. Driven by housing, food, transport and alcoholic beverages. Looking ahead, the average inflation forecasts for both 2025 and 2026 have been revised upwards to 4.2% and 4.5% respectively, compared to previous forecasts of 4% and 4.4%. This upward revision is primarily due to a weaker exchange rate and higher administered price assumptions. The annual growth in PSC remained broadly unchanged since the last MPC meeting. Private sector credit extension growth stood at 3.9% in February 2025, fractionally lower than the 4% registered in December 2024, primarily ascribed to weak demand for credit by households. However, private sector credit extension growth averaged 4% during the first 2 months of 2025, notably higher compared to 2% in the same period in 2024 due to increased demand from businesses, especially in the category of other loans and advances. Despite this recent uptick, overall credit growth remains sluggish. Namibia's merchandise trade deficit narrowed to 2.9% by 2.9% to 4.6 billion Namibia dollars during the first 2 months of 2025. The improved position was due to increased export receipts, primarily from gold and uranium. However, this gain was partially offset by the rise in import payments, especially in the categories of machinery and consumer goods. The stock of international reserves stood at 59.7 billion Namibian dollars at the end of March 2025, lower compared to the 64.3 billion Namibia dollars recorded at the end of January 2025. The decline was due to rising imports and government payments. This level of foreign reserves translates to an estimated import cover of 3.9 months, which is deemed adequate to sustain the currency peg between the Namibia dollar and the South African rand and meet the country's international financial obligations. It is also above the international benchmark of countries' foreign reserves holdings of 3 months. Since the start of April 2025, the Namibia dollar exchange rate against major currencies has, on balance, depreciated, primarily due to elevated global uncertainty following escalation in global trade tensions. The most recent levels of exchange rate are also weaker than those at the previous meeting, as uncertainty remains elevated. The global economy expanded at a firm pace in the fourth quarter of 2024, but the medium-term outlook has been subjected to significant downward pressure. Since the last MPC meeting, global inflationary trends have been mixed, while monetary policy stances remain steady across most of the monitored central banks. Global growth remained resilient during the fourth quarter of 2024, with growth rising in most of the key monitored economies, except in the US, where it slowed, albeit still registering a firm growth rate. However, global growth prospects have come under immense downside pressure due to ramifications of the trade policy shifts in the US. Consequently, global growth forecasts for both 25 and 26 are anticipated to be revised downwards. Prices for most key international commodities exhibited increased volatility since the last MPC meeting. Specifically, the downward trajectory in diamond prices observed at the previous MPC meeting persisted, reflecting weaker global demand and competition from lab-grown diamonds. Crude oil prices initially trended upwards to the end of March 2025, but fell notably in early April 2025 due to concerns about tariffs and the increase in supply from non-OPEC countries. Copper and zinc prices trended downwards on account of the US trade policy uncertainty. Uranium spot prices also declined, attributable to increased global supply. Conversely, the price of gold trended upward, driven by safe haven demand, which was amplified by trade tensions. Since the last MPC meeting, global equity and bond markets displayed heightened volatility, primarily attributed to considerable uncertainty regarding the US trade policy. While stock markets initially gained, the recent imposition of tariffs resulted in significant losses. Pivoting to bond markets, yields have increased since the last MPC meeting, driven by higher uncertainty, as well as concerns regarding the outlook for global growth and inflation. Both equity and bond markets, however, staged partial recoveries of recent losses following the introduction of a 90-day pause of punitive tariffs. Inflation showed mixed patterns since the last MPC meeting, and key advanced economies' consumer price inflation trended lower, especially in the US, Euro area, and Japan, while the United Kingdom observed an uptick. Conversely, inflationary pressures persisted in most of the monitored emerging market and developing economies, with inflation rising in Brazil, Russia, and South Africa. Meanwhile, inflation decelerated in India, while China recorded deflation. Looking ahead, global inflation is projected to recede from an average of 5.8% in 2024 to 4.2% in 2025 and 3.5% in 2026. Nevertheless, significant uncertainty regarding the forecast remains. Most monitored central banks have kept their policy rates unchanged since the previous MPC meeting, given elevated uncertainty. The US Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, the People's Bank of China, the South African Reserve Bank, and the Bank of Russia kept their policy rates steady. In contrast, the ECB and the Bank of India eased rates, while the Bank of Brazil tightened rates. So let's look then, given all these, what the monetary policy stances and the considerations. In determining the appropriate monetary policy stance, the MPC considered the extraordinary level of uncertainty introduced to the global economy by trade policy shifts, which was likely to dampen growth. The MPC noted that the potentially slower global growth would lower the projected trajectories of most commodity prices, oil included, but this favorable impact on domestic inflation seemed to be offset by a weaker exchange rate. Some upward price pressures from administered prices are also seem likely in the coming months. Accordingly, the MPC was in broad agreement with a projected trajectory for inflation that accelerates moderately but then struggles levels around 4.5% in the medium term. While the relatively high level of domestic real interest rates, adequate level of foreign reserves, and sluggish credit growth suggested the possibility of a further reduction in the repo rate, the MPC was cognizant of the need to avoid significant interest rate differential within the CMA in the interest of orderly capital flows. The committee was mindful of the magnitude of the trade deficit and the impact of the imminent settling of international debt obligations on the country's international reserve holdings. Against this background, the MPC decided to keep the repo rate unchanged at 6.75%. Commercial banks are accordingly expected to maintain the prime lending rates at 10.5%. This policy stand will continue safeguarding the one-to-one link between the Namibia dollar and the South African rand while supporting domestic economic activity. Thank you.
Now, as you heard right there, dear listeners, ultimately this primarily would continue up until June 2025, primarily in terms of maintaining the peg between the rand and the Namibian dollar, as well as also ensuring that domestic economic activity is still enlivened or kept alive through the various particular volatile and uncertain timeframes taking place across the world. We step in into our second item, and just a minute away from our next ad break specifically, we take a look at the developments coming through in the local, innovative as well as also corporate sense. This is as First National Bank Namibia, FNB, partners up with LEFA to promote safe travels. Now, as the, as insurance clients are set to receive a free LEFA ride voucher every second month. Now, the FNB Namibia has partnered with the ride hailing service, LEFA, to promote safe transport choices while extending added value to its insurance clients. The partnership will see FNB insurance clients receiving a free LEFA ride voucher every second month, and that the initiative is aimed at preventing drinking and driving while offering convenience and safety. Now, FNB Insurance CEO George Cattles said the partnership reflects the bank's commitment to going beyond traditional offerings and giving back to its clients. We'll take a quick listen to the FNB CEO, but before that, we'll take a short break.
Taking flight has never been easier. Paratus is introducing SkyFi internet packages with speeds that will have you reaching for your seatbelt. Starting from $500, excluding VAT, per month, with speeds reaching up to 10 megabits per second. There's even a prepaid option where you can top up your SkyFi internet for just $15 per gigabyte. No contracts, no fuss. Visit your nearest Paratus branch to find out more. Or go to paratus.africa/Namibia to sign up online. Always prepare,
Paratus. Coming back there from the break, dear listeners, and we just surpassed or completed the first third of today's program of the On the Radar here with your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. We continue where we left off, specifically with the FNB Insurance CEO, George Gattles, saying that the partnership reflects the bank's commitment to going beyond traditional offerings and giving back to its clients. Let's have a listen to this.
That's a beautiful partnership with Interim. It's one of my favorite rides. I use LEFA a lot. But really for us, it's extending value to our clients. We pay up to $8 million in no claims bonuses a year. We have fixed benefits. We have fixed excesses. So we're really trying to extend our offering beyond the normal for a client. And this is what the LEFA partnership will do. So we're giving our clients the opportunity every second month to get a double voucher to go home in the evenings. We know Namibians love to have a bit of a social, but it does come with consequences. We don't want to see our clients being caught by the city police. And we also don't want to have those incidents tomorrow morning where we must try and figure out, did you have one too many or not? So they're really extending this to our clients. If every second month you get your free voucher. Priming to a LEFA, I love these electronic vehicles. I say to Malkies now, they've got 10 of the electronic vehicles all driven by women. And I think that is such a brilliant initiative. I get very disappointed when I prime into the vehicles, the other ones. So I love priming in. It's such a great conversation. And it's in with the unemployment as it is, giving an opportunity to 10 ladies and their families as well. It's such a special thing. So really don't want to say much tonight. Please look out for that. We'll be launched to our clients tomorrow morning early. You'll see it pop into your SMSs. Use the voucher. Please use it as much as possible. And although it is only in Windhoek, we extend the voucher to everyone in Namibia. So when you do come to Windhoek, drop your car at the hotel or your family, wherever you're staying, use the voucher and go out in Windhoek. So really from our side, Malkies, you and your team, Yalu, thank you so much for joining us in this partnership. It's very much a first in Namibia. And you know, really for us as part of the First Rand Group, extending our opportunities for you to go and us to go together.
So George, thank you for joining us. Please give us an overview of this partnership between FNB Insurance and LEFA.
So our partnership with LEFA is really to benefit our clients. We want to promote road safety. So when clients in the evening are driving and they're going out for dinner or some function, that they can get off the roads, use the voucher. Each client will get a double voucher or a voucher to home and to the venue every second month. So for us, it's really to promote road safety. And I think with LEFA, it's a local Namibian company, a local entrepreneur with Malkies and his team. So really promoting entrepreneurial spirit and SMEs in Namibia.
Yes, and if you can briefly touch on why you think it's important for companies such as FNB Insurance to partner with local SMEs such as LEFA.
So I think it's a first-rand philosophy that we want to make Namibia globally competitive by providing opportunities. And I think this is one of the opportunities we provide. So we really launched the SME Hub in last month, where SMEs can really interact with the person on the telephone to assist them. So SMEs are the driver of the nation. So really, decrease unemployment, the more SMEs you get involved, we have oil and gas coming up, and various other partnerships. So we partnered with, at FNB Insurance, with a couple of really great SMEs, and Namibian startups. Like LEFA, we have a great partnership with TechGeeks, we do all our phones and goodies. So, you know, that's what makes it great for us. And then we have this Namibian context. We're really engaging with Namibians. Namibians have an awesome spirit. So, you know, that's why we love doing this.
Lastly, tell us about the drivers of the EV vehicles in this partnership.
So, I don't know if everyone knows. So, Malkies and Mateen have got 10 EV Nissan Leaf vehicles, all electronic, and all of the drivers are female drivers. So, really a great initiative. Especially with maybe unemployment. We do think when I've got a young daughter, not there's been any incidents with the LEFA drivers, but you just feel a little bit more safe. I love climbing into the LEFA electric vehicles. It's so quiet. And it's a really a great initiative. It's helping families of those ladies also to get food on the table. So we really love that. And it was one of the biggest keys for us as well. When they launched that, It was a great initiative and really helped us to, you know, to solidify the partnership that we wanted to do.
Now, meanwhile, talking to the LEFA founder and CEO, Malkies Awusuku, he praised the FNB Insurance for placing its trust in local entrepreneurs. Now, speaking at the launch of the initiative, Awusuku said that the partnership goes beyond business, stating that it highlights the importance of investing in homegrown solutions and supporting the small and medium enterprise SME sector. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
Thank you very much for the FNB Insurance for the opportunity. What I would like to highlight is just your faith in a local company, local entrepreneurs. It speaks volumes. And I'd like to encourage more corporate companies to start looking around, like, at other, there's a lot of other SMEs and corporate, small companies doing great things. They need your support. They need you to give them a chance or two. And thank FNB Insurance for this. And I think it's going to be a great partnership. And I'm excited for the going ahead.
Share with us how it feels as a Namibian SME owner, how it feels to partner with such a large corporation.
Yes. A partnership with a corporate company of FNB Insurance reputation, part of the RMB Group, it's a huge stamp of trust from them in us as an SME. It shows that our work and our work ethic and our effort doesn't go into vain. And when corporates like that recognize your work, it really means a lot for us, and we keep working and doing the work that needs to be done. But I would also just like to encourage all the SMEs out there, don't give up, keep working, keep doing, making the right decision, putting the effort in the right places. Someone is watching, and hopefully your partnership will come your way.
Now, before we continue with the rest of the programming, we take a short ad break and come back right after this. This is a live read for the fifth edition of the annual Te Ya Kuku tournament. The fifth edition of the annual Te Ya Kuku tournament is taking place this Easter weekend. Make your way to Ondangwa for an action-packed weekend of football at the Heke Field from 18 to 21 April 2025. Over 40 youth and veteran teams have registered to compete for over $75,000 Namibian dollars in prize money. Stay tuned to the Eagle FM social media pages of the weekend for live coverage of the tournament. Contact Mr. Kalimbo at +264 81 287 0909 to book your stall. Once again, contact Mr. Kalimbo at +264 81 287 0909 to book your stall. We return back to the rest of this midday or drive time session on the radar, specifically heading into our next item, where we take a look specifically at the realms or the intersectional realms, specifically where climate change and agricultural innovation and research plays a significant role. Now, this is as the Deputy Minister of Agriculture, Ruth Maseke, noted that the country is making great strides in terms of playing a pivotal role in the implementation and the coordination of research projects on critical areas of water and food security, which are valued at 2.8 million euros, which is approximately 59 million Namibian dollars. The Deputy Minister said that the Southern African Science Service Center for Climate Change and Adaptive Land Management has played its own part and its own important role in the implementation as well of similar research projects, most of which directly respond to the climate change issues that are generated across the country. Let's have a listen to what the Deputy Minister said.
And identify ways to foster or enhance impact of our collective efforts. Under fiscal 1.0 research portfolio, which runs from 2012 to 2018, Namibia successfully executed 18 national tasks with a total investment of approximately 1.8 million euro. This project provides tangible benefits to our communities and established as a solid research foundation. We are now progressing through CESCAL 2.0, funded by the German Federal Ministry of Education and Research, with a remarkable of 10 million euro investment. Through this phase, Namibia continues to play a vital role in coordinating and implementing research projects, particularly in critical areas of water and food security. Valued at 2.8 million euro, equivalent to approximately 59 million at the current exchange rate. This workshop brings together a principal investigators, farmers, students, and researchers to showcase their work, exchange ideas, and explore opportunities of collaboration. I therefore encourage all participants today to engage actively in this discussion, as we are vital for transformation research, finding into policies, tools, and the service that can improve livelihood and strengthen the community resilience. Ladies and gentlemen, this year Namibia has the honor of hosting this very important workshop following a successful event in Botswana and South Africa. The theme is strengthening climate resilience through food security, water management, in particular relevant given the climate reality of our nation facing. Namibia continues to experience increasing climate vulnerabilities ranging from severe drought to extremely rainfall, flashes, floods, and outbreak of pests and diseases. Just last year, our former president declared a state of emergency due to prolonged drought, which caused a wider spread of crop failures, water shortages, and depletions of natural resources. More recently, we experienced rain that distracted flooding in various regions, while locusts that increased in the Zambezi region and foster further threats to food security. These ongoing challenges remind us that adaptive and science-based solutions are not just necessary, they are urgent that we need to look at. The establishment of CESCAO by 6 committed nations' response to climate change has proven to be a timely and visionary initiative. Namibia takes a pride in being the first country to sign and reiterate the CESCAO threat, followed by Zambia. We have also continued to honor our annual financial contribution to institution. I urge other member states to complete their ratifications process so we can relevant or continue with CESCAO to the status of international organizations, strengthening its governance and global standing. CESCAO achievements, 1.1, Namibia received 64 automatic weather stations, which have significantly improved our national climate monitoring capacity. In 2024, CESCAO secured additional €2.9 million to update and maintain 44 stations across country, benefiting a broader scope of the all the stakeholder involved, from the farmers to all expertise. CESCAO 2.0 has also supported 8 national research projects and awarded scholarship to 34 Namibian students pursuing honors, masters.
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owapumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo, ndele ouna osheenditho. Ouna aniilonga yapumbwa okufutwa, ashike mboka yina oondjo dhoye otayeende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, AutoCash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye, eto pewa epresenda 45% dhongushu yosheenditho shoye. Muule ashike, wemintetilo 45%. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula, oshimaliwa ethimbo weshi pumbwa.
Easy money.
Tudengela nena ko nora hamano yimwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Ano ko nora hamano yimwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Oshipulera ko AutoCash.
And PhD degrees across all member states. The number of beneficiaries have reached to 104 students since 2022. In this renewable energy space, I commend CESCAO for championing green hydrogen development. The launch of African first green hydrogen village in Namibia, more especially in the Rongo region, is a landmark achieved. The accompanying Namibian youth for green for green hydrogen scholarship program has so far funded 70 students in its first cohort and 78 in the second, studying at institutions such as IUM, NAST, UNAM, and technical and vocational education trainings colleges. Ladies and gentlemen, as we work collectively towards the sustainable development goals and Africans' agenda 2063, CESCAO's role is promoting science-based solution and regional cooperation becomes an increasingly vital. The research presented and deliberating during this workshop must be translated into practical intervention that improves the livelihood of our people, which is the key factor.
Now, coming back from what the Deputy Minister Masaki said there, the Interim Executive Director of SASCOL, that being Dr. Budzanani Tacheba, noted that it is critical to still play an active role in the impact that climate change does have on the agricultural landscape and its sectors. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
It is an honor and a privilege to stand before you today to share perspectives on one of the most pressing challenges of our time, climate change, and to look at its profound impact on food security and water resources here in Namibia. Namibia is blessed with rich biodiversity, but is vulnerable to climate variability. Therefore, we must act decisively to build a resilient and secure, sustainable future for all Namibians. Let's talk about the climate challenge in Namibia. Namibia is no stranger to the harsh realities of climate change. Increasing temperatures, prolonged droughts, erratic rainfall, and desertification, which threaten our agriculture, water supplies, and livelihoods. According to the recent reports, Namibia is one of the driest countries in sub-Saharan Africa, with water scarcity affecting over 60% of the population. At the same time, food insecurity remains a critical issue, with rural communities and smallholder farmers bearing the brunt of climate-induced shocks. Therefore, the question before us is clear. How do we strengthen our resilience to climate change while ensuring food security and sustainable water management? I'll delve into that question. First of all, let us reflect on the cost associated with climate change. From records, climate change costs African economies up to 5% of their economic outputs. This comes due to the impacts climate change affects a number of key sectors. And this is because of the factors that are brought in by climate change, being temperature increases, which is accelerating extreme weathers that worsen food insecurity, causing displacement and conflict. Agricultural productivity that is continuously failing, adaptation financing that is insufficient, loss and damages that are rising, and early warning systems that do not reach everyone that they should. Quoting from the World Meteorological Organization State of the Climate in Africa report of 2023, the cost of adaptation is estimated to be between 2-3% of the region's gross domestic product. According to the UNECA Climate Policy Center, the loss and damage costs in Africa due to climate change are projected to range in billions of US dollars. The key economic sectors that depend on climate systems have recorded declines over the years due to the variability of rainfall. These are agriculture and food supply, freshwater resources, as well as forestry resources. These have all suffered the most, the consequences of which are contributed significantly to the decline in livelihoods, especially in rural areas. Now, then comes SASCOL. As you may all be aware, the Southern Africa Science Service Center for Climate Change and Adaptive Land Management is a Chapter 5 non-profit joint initiative of the governments of Angola, Botswana, Germany, Namibia, South Africa, and Zambia. It was established in 2012 to respond to the grand challenges of climate change. In 2019, the member states signed a SASCOL treaty. Namibia and Zambia have already ratified this treaty, commencing with Namibia first in 2021. And we really commend Namibia for that. SASCOL governance structures are constituted under the SASCOL treaty. They include the Council of Ministers, constituted by the different ministries under the SASCOL treaty. There is also a SASCOL governing board, appointed under each line ministry and providing SASCOL direction to management and staff. The SASCOL Regional Secretariat was established in Windhoek, Namibia, with national node offices at country level, reporting directly to the Secretariat. The ratification of the SASCOL Treaty will enable the organization to be registered under the United Nations framework to acquire a legal personality as a fully-fledged international organization. It does not come as a surprise, therefore, that the SASCOL 2.0 research thematic workshop here in Namibia has adopted the theme Strengthening Climate Resilience Through Food Security and Water Management for Improved Quality of Life. The SASCAR Research Program, commonly referred to as SASCAR 2.0, is being implemented in 5 countries with the research community comprising more than 50 institutions through interdisciplinary, transboundary, and cross-cutting research topics, promoting diversity and cross-fertilization among the research communities. Under the current research program, there are key research projects that speak to the theme of the workshop. First of all, when we talk about empowering communities through education and technology, climate resilience begins at the grassroots level. We must educate farmers and pastoralists on the climate adaptation strategies. SASCAR, through its research program, continues to develop capacity through SASCAR short courses and imparting skills through technology uptake. We need to leverage on digital tools. This includes weather forecasting applications, soil moisture sensors, and this will lead to improved decision-making, building climate resilience among the communities. Our SASCAR WeatherNet data and related data products are available on an open access basis to the research community and to the public at large for uptake. When it comes to supporting smallholder farmers, providing access to climate information, irrigation technologies, and financial resources will empower farmers to adapt. Governments, private sector, and development partners must collaborate to scale up these initiatives, ensuring no Namibian goes hungry in the face of climate adversity. Under our flagship projects, the SASCAR Sustain Project, which stands for Sustainable Food Security and Woodland Utilization for Drought-Prone Communal Areas under the Climate Change in Study Communities Project, seeks to integrate nitrogen fixation technology for drought-tolerant legumes while simultaneously improving degraded soils. We need to encourage our youth and women participation in green entrepreneurship and sustainable farming. To this end, SASCAR has embarked on the implementation of the renewable energy bilateral projects on green hydrogen production to enhance green ammonia and other derivatives in the form of fertilizers and chemicals towards improved crops productivity. This holds immense potential for economic and livelihoods improvements and entrepreneurship activities by youth, including alumni from the SASCAR programs, particularly the green hydrogen. In terms of research infrastructure, the SASCAR program continues to provide research infrastructure in the region. In order to support the research program, SASCAR has funded installation of more than 164 automatic weather stations located at strategic locations in the region. 108 of these automatic weather stations are currently being refurbished, including here in Namibia. Data from these automatic weather stations, together as well as other SASCAR-generated data, provide valuable insights to the region's climate scenarios. The projects have also contributed research infrastructure in the form of vehicles, form of drones, form of laboratories, equipment that are currently being utilized within the institutions that are supported. When it comes to enhancing food security through climate smart agriculture, to combat food insecurity, we must adopt climate smart agriculture practices that increase productivity while conserving natural resources, promoting drought resilient crops and investing in drought tolerant crops such as pearl millet and sorghum can safeguard farmers against crop failures. Under the SASCAR research program, we are implementing the Climate Smart Crops Project towards the characterization and technology transfer of value-added products from climate smart emerging crops to improve food security in Namibia. The Climate Smart Agriculture Project seeks to characterize the molecular and physiological characteristics of indigenous plants to examine how they can be used as food security buffer and to improve arable cropping systems. The project has already developed prototypes which are now in trials. All in all, there is a need to practice sustainable land management by adopting techniques like conservation agriculture, agroforestry, and rotational grazing to restore soil health and to reduce erosion. SASCAR is implementing the Rangeland Project, which is commonly referred to as RIPS, that is examining the different technologies for bush thinning, rehabilitation, and aftercare, looking at their efficiency, cost effectiveness, impact on hydrological cycle, and biodiversity, among others. On the other end, we also have the TPEC projects, which seeks to establish the probabilistic climate tipping points for Southern Africa. Through a climate change information tool for adaption to regional tipping points in Southern Africa. Under the TPO program, we have seen
now coming back there from the report, we quickly step into a short break and return right after this.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsi Nehangano, The Osherero Omaimburiro, The Catholic Simane Kakarunga, The Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Coming back there from the quick break and heading into what is the last third of today's particular program, we still continue on with a local news segment and specifically turning to a discussion that emanates from the National Assembly of the Tuesday edition or Tuesday session that took place. Now, this is as in the Tuesday session of the 8th Parliament, Deputy Minister for Education Dino Bolotti said that his ministry has to stand for the entrepreneurial endeavors of the country in order to support the overall ecosystem to achieve the economic potential that is being ignored. The Deputy Minister touched on the aspect of the role of education, of the education sector, and its foundational role that it has to continue playing in ensuring that other sectors that feed off it, like the research and innovation developmental sectors, must be strengthened in order to generate the skills and sectors of the future. On sports development, Bolotti noted that there is still much that has to be done to generate the caliber of athletes that will ensure that the nation's competitive spirit is reflected in providing national prestige to the country. Let's have a listen to what he said.
I rise today not just as a public servant, but as a passionate advocate for Namibian entrepreneurship. But let us be honest, all of the honorable members here, myself included, can never truly understand the plight of entrepreneurs in our country. Many of us may have an entrepreneurial spirit. We may even be engaged in entrepreneurial endeavors. However, we still receive a salary and will therefore never fully understand the plight to be a proper entrepreneur with very little support from our communities and, dare I say, government institutions. According to the African Development Bank, African Entrepreneurship Index, Namibia ranks below the continental average in entrepreneurship ecosystems, largely due to access to finance, policy fragmentation, and low support from startups or for startups at grassroots levels. We can, we must, and henceforth shall do more for entrepreneurs and MSMEs. I repeat, we do more to render the requisite financial, technical, and market access support to entrepreneurs across our 14 regions under each of our 57 local authorities and 121 constituencies. To quote the late Grace Hopper, U.S. Navy Admiral, who is credited for coining the phrase, rather ask for forgiveness than permission. I too shall rather ask for forgiveness for being unapologetic about service delivery and our intentional pursuit to empower Namibian entrepreneurs. Because entrepreneurship is not a luxury, it is in fact the key tenet for our growth and prosperity. Honorable Deputy Speaker, honorable members, if we are honest, which we are, our economy is not yet working for many. The latest survey by the Namibia Statistics Agency reveals a national unemployment crisis. These are not numbers, these are lives. I'm convinced that this burden, once inverted, could become our strength. Notwithstanding these realities, I do not stand here to despair, but I stand here with conviction to contribute toward the collective leadership solution. Because these numbers also tell another story that is one of potential. According to our central bank, our economy grew by 3.7% in 2024. and we are informed by our most capable Minister of Finance, Comrade Minister Shafuda, that we expect growth of 4.5% in 2025. This is a positive and optimistic forecast, not a political speech. But growth without inclusion will not translate to development if our young people are not part of this growth. If they cannot see it, participate in it, and contribute towards it, it will not be sustained. We have promised hope, and this is where our work begins. My mouth is so dry today. Permit me to share, between 2017 and 2023, the number of our learners in our education system grew by more than 120,000, an increase of 17%. But this surge was not matched by proportional growth in both teachers or facilities. We have observed a rising learner-to-teacher ratio. We still observe overcrowded classrooms, often forcing children into afternoon shifts, particularly in the early grades. Now, this is not merely a logistical issue. It is a function of development planning and certainly a warning sign. A system under pressure will struggle to deliver quality, and quality is what our young people deserve and what our economy demands. What we want is education and not just certification. Yet amidst these pressures, we are not under-investing. Allow me to quote my Honourable Minister, Sanet Steenkamp, when she says, "We are not spending on education, we are investing in education." Our Swapo-led government invests approximately 20,000 Namibian dollars per student, and as a percentage of GDP per capita, places us in the same league as countries such as Austria, United Kingdom, Switzerland, Denmark, and South Korea. So this is not a call for more, which is relative. It is a call to do more with what we have. We must confront the hard truth. Investment alone does not translate to transformation. Accountability must meet expenditure, innovation must meet bureaucracy, and results must meet intention. Vote 27, Sport, Youth, and National Services allocated 1.26 billion Namibian dollars for this financial year. I was asked on a panel last week whether this is enough, and I responded saying no, it is not. However, acknowledging that a two-third budget increase and acknowledging that real value is yet to be derived from this investment, our charge is not only to spend, but to deliver, to ensure that every dollar unlocks capability, that every learner moves closer to opportunity, and to ensure that the product prepared at primary level is equipped to perform at secondary level, thereby reducing the high rate of attrition. Education must become the engine of productivity, underpinned by research and development. It must close the gap through innovation, through sports, through arts, but only by believing urgently and relentlessly in the potential of our people. Innovation will drive the future of our economy, and it will be shaped by those we empower today. We are a country rich in young people who are ready to build, ready to serve, ready to lead. Let us be worthy of them. As I draw to a close, the ministry will not be driven by slogans. We will be driven by service, by results, and by the quiet power of delivery. We are already hard at work to improve the equity and quality of education systems, to redress national social infrastructure deficits for both schools and sports facilities. To the teacher in the overcrowded classroom, I say we see you. To the young person waiting for your chance, we hear your cry. And to every Namibian who still believes in the promise of this country, we shall not let you down. Let us collaborate to make Namibia the winning nation that she is. Henceforth, our sportsmen and women will play to win. Our musicians and creatives will shine and take their place amongst their contemporaries. Our youthful energy and intellectual exploits will be developed and harnessed to add value to the country we all call home, Namibia. Honourable Speaker, I therefore support the 2025-2026 budget, inclusive of the annual membership of First Ladies that we have committed to remaining a member of.
Now, heading into our last item for this afternoon specifically, we take a look at a particular event that happened on Tuesday evening. Now, speaking at a public event held in collaboration by the Open Society Foundation and the Action Coalition Namibia platform in Windhoek on Tuesday, The Vice President, Lucia Witbooi, noted that Namibia plays a pivotal role in the international sphere of negotiations as the country is a global leader in the reparative justice subject matter. Now, Vice President Witbooi noted that the Namibia supports the AU's, the African Union's agenda and theme of 2025 of justice for Africans and people of African descent through reparations. The Vice President also noted that the role of women in these historical events have symbolized the rebuilding exercises after atrocities were committed towards them, and when these have subsided, the leadership and development roles that women have played afterwards. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
Yeah, the platform is organized under the theme of women's leadership and the reparations agenda. This is a continental and historical significance. The African Union has declared 2025 the year of justice for Africans and people of African descent. This is not a symbolic act. It is an affirmation that the legacy of historical injustices must be addressed through collective and personal actions. Namibia's experience is one that echoes across our continent. As a nation, we are born out of struggle. A people who suffered the brutality of the 20th century genocide, highly oppressive apartheid occupation, and generations of economic exclusion for most Namibians. Today, we stand as a democracy committed to healing, but also to holding space for truth. We are proud to be one of the few nations on the African continent engaged in a formal reparations process for genocide. While I will not speak about the ongoing bilateral negotiations between Namibia and the Federal Republic of Germany, no comment on the joint declaration currently under review. I must state clearly that Namibia is a global leader in the reparative justice movement because of our work on this front. And therefore intend to fully support the AU agenda on reparative justice to the extent that it is consistent with our foreign policy stance and does not compromise the integrity of our reparations journey or of African unity. Across the continent, several countries have also begun to shut their own paths towards reparative justice. Algeria has called for formal restitution from France. The Democratic Republic of Congo has initiated legal claims over colonial crimes. South Africa's post-apartheid and post-1994 transformation truth and reconciliation commission as one of the earliest models for symbolic justice in Southern Africa. And from what I've learned from yesterday's dialogue, there is a need for us to increase the pool of those that need to be held accountable for reparative justice. Zimbabwe is another example of countries that has raised demands around historical land deed possession. The road to reparations is very linear. But the message is clear. Africa is reclaiming its history and associated loss of land, items, family bodies, and other earthly possessions and reparation appropriate payment. I am well aware that there has also been a call for more meaningful dialogue on our own process. And as the new Vice President, I intend to look at the suggestions that are coming from platforms like this, which is welcome, and ongoing discussions on our own reparations dialogue. Namibia's liberation struggle was not only a fight for independence, it was a fight for dignity, for justice, and for the right to define our own future. And at the heart of that struggle were women, courageous, visionary, and resilient. From the battlefields to the negotiations, from exile camps to community organizing, the Namibian women were architects of resistance and pillars of hope. Leaders like Anna Mukunda, Njeu Tala, Angolo, and many unnamed heroes helped shape a consciousness rooted in justice and equality. Women's leadership is a heritage that continues to guide us today, not just in the past. That same spirit of resolve, clarity, and compassion must guide us as we work towards reparative justice. Women are carefully and generationally aware of the multi-layered injustices caused by assaults, depossession, and colonialism. Both the dreams and the memories are carried by them.
Now, the Vice President still added, in terms of the ongoing particular global discussion regarding reparations, as well as also the AU theme, this is what the Vice President still had to add onto that subject matter.
In the past, that same spirit of resolve, clarity, and compassion must guide us as we work towards reparative justice. Women are carefully and generationally aware of the multi-layered injustices caused by assaults, depossession, and colonialism. Both the dreams and the memories are carried by them. Compensation is merely one aspect of reparative justice. It has to do with acceptance, recovery, and change. A holistic perspective that centers communities, restores dignity, and guarantees that justice is a life experience rather than an idealized concept is what women leaders bring to this process. Their opinions guarantee that reparations take into account both practical requirements and sentimental realities. Thus, Namibia's post-colonial oppression path has not been easy. We have learned important lessons, for instance, that many conversations around reparative justice must be fixed with political maturity, ideological consciousness, and broad participatory consensus.
And on that note, dear listeners, this brings us up to the end of the local news segment. We'll quickly take a short break and we come back after that, quickly heading into the last remnants of today's program, that being On the Radar, specifically getting into the international news segment after the break.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Now coming back there from the extended ad break, and once again, as mentioned, dear listeners, we'll be stepping into the last 10 minutes of today's program, specifically into the international news segment. Getting into South Africa specifically, where the South African Reserve Bank has also announced that they will move to the monetary policy closer to neutral. Now, this is as the Reserve Bank of South Africa released its April monetary policy review, and its reflection on the period from October 2024 to the end of March 2025. Now, in the period under review, the Monetary Policy Committee of the South African Reserve Bank had cut interest rates by 50 basis points, with the repo rate standing currently in South Africa at 7.5%, pointing towards a well-contained inflation levels. We have a listen to what they have to add.
Policy review meeting, Governor Lesi Chakanyako immediately set the tone, with global trade uncertainty the main underpin of discussions.
We meet here today when the world economy is in economic turmoil. The confidence regarding global economic developments we projected in October has largely evaporated. And this has been displaced by heightened economic uncertainty due to trade tensions.
The Reserve Bank's head of research gave the main review presentation, noting that while inflation had been coming down in advanced economies, albeit not to the extent that was targeted, roughly 2%, higher global tariffs were likely to see inflation ratchet up again, also warning of the possibility of stagflation, which speaks to low levels of growth amid higher levels of inflation.
One of the things that that combination of circumstances or dynamics does is it creates more volatility in financial markets. And again, this point, harking back to this point about uncertainty, this graph shows you a little bit about what that uncertainty actually looks like when it translates into interest rate expectations in advanced market economies. And the takeaway here is simply that these lines all show what was expected to be interest rate cuts in the UK, which is green, the Eurozone, which is red, and the US, which is in blue. And these have changed a lot over just a four-month time frame.
Bank says with global economic dynamics as uncertain as they are, it now means central banks' policy rate paths are now less certain, indicating that it looked as though rates would probably stay higher than previously expected for longer. Focusing on South Africa, the Reserve Bank noted that the economy continued to be bedeviled by weak productive capacity.
Sectors had a lot of volatility, driven both by mining and agriculture, but the secondary sector, which is in yellow, has been and remains pretty depressed. Broader demand and supply both are contributing to this, to a weak investment profile, and that investment profile is pretty critical to growth, as I will show you just now. If you look at this graph, you can see whether it's general government, private sector in blue, or public corporations in red, those real gross fixed capital formation levels remain, again, way too low.
In the question and answer session, concerns were raised around the economic impacts of global tariffs and the implications of South Africa losing access to the African Growth and Opportunity Act, also known as AGOA, which has enabled duty-free access for some of the country's goods for over the past two decades. The bank put things into perspective, indicating that about 7.5% of South Africa's total global exports were bound for the United States, adding that of that 7.5%, only 25% of it benefited from AGOA, also noting that it was time to look at the bigger picture.
Obviously, things are changing a lot. I think the important thing here to realize is it's quite a different scenario when the whole world is facing new tariffs. And that impact is going to be considerably bigger than when only South Africa is impacted, because that impacts global demand around the world, and that's going to have a much bigger impact on our outlook and so on. But that's stuff we're still working on. Thanks.
The Reserve Bank noted that if stagflation became a reality, it would make the work of central banks around the world that much more difficult. This, as they work to tame inflation with higher interest rates, they could end up further exacerbating contractions or stagnation in GDP levels.
Coming back from the developments coming through from the South African Reserve Bank, we head into the rest of the continental region, specifically going to the Sudan civil war, where the United Nations has warned that that ignoring the plight of Sudan's refugees will have catastrophic consequences. More than 12 million people have been displaced as Sudan enters its third year of civil strife. Now, diplomats from around the world are meeting in London at a conference seeking ways to end the conflict and provide more humanitarian relief. Now, the UK and Germany have both announced new funding for aid organizations active in the region, but neither of the warring parties are at the summit. Let's have a listen to this.
Refugees will have catastrophic consequences. More than 12 million people have been displaced as the country enters its third year of civil war. Diplomats from around the world are meeting in London at a conference seeking ways to end the conflict and provide more humanitarian relief. The UK and Germany have announced new funding for aid organizations active in the region, but neither of the warring parties is at the summit. Well, in his opening remarks, British Foreign Secretary David Lammy said the international community should not look away from the conflict.
Many have given up on Sudan. That is wrong. It's morally wrong when we see so many civilians beheaded, infants as young as one subjected to sexual violence, more people facing famine than anywhere else in the world. We simply cannot look away.
Jorge Moreira da Silva is executive director of the UN Office for Project Services and has just landed in Sudan. Welcome to DW. What are the most pressing issues you're hoping to address there?
Well, the UNOPS, as you know, is the UN Agency for Operation for Infrastructure Project Management. And therefore, I was very interested in my visit to understand the needs from the people, both in the short, but also in the mid and long term. And clearly, as you said, and in the piece that was shared before this interview, we are dealing with the largest humanitarian crisis in the world. And therefore, the idea that you need to get peace first and aid later, it's wrong. It won't work. We need peace. We need a genuine dialogue among parties to get the deal. But we cannot delay action regarding the humanitarian aid, but also the preparation for early recovery and reconstruction. Today, I visit an internally displaced people center where I could see the immense need from the people living in that center. For instance, it's a school for 800 girls during the day, but then you also have 250 IDPs, internally displaced people, that live there in tents. There are only three toilets, three latrines for 1,000 people there.
Right.
The IDPs, the internally displaced people, were telling me what they need immediately, but they were also telling me what they need to go back for. There is hope because, for instance, Khartoum was released. So there is hope, eagerness from people to go back home. But at the same time, when I asked them, what do you need to go back home? They were saying, first, we need mine action. We need the unexploded ordnance to be removed because nobody wants to get killed by landmines. They said that we need houses. We need jobs. We need water, sanitation, electricity. And that's why the international community cannot fail. We right. know that there are ongoing efforts for peace, but it's also important to raise the bar in terms of the funding for humanitarian aid.
And of course, aid and peace, very much the thrust of this this conference being held in London at the moment. This morning, we talked to Dalia Abdel Manaim. She's a political commentator from Khartoum who fled Sudan with her family 2 years ago. Well, we asked her about the conference happening in London, and I'd like your thoughts on what she told us.
There is a weapons embargo over Darfur, but the weapons keep coming into Sudan via Darfur through Chad with the help of the UAE. So tell me, you know, why should I have any expectations for this conference to actually do anything when, you know, no one has sanctioned the United Arab Emirates? No one has pressured the United Arab Emirates to step back from their support. And it's not just the UAE. It's also other countries that are supporting both sides to this war. And this is a war on civilians because we are the ones who have paid the price for this war. It's not the generals. It's not their armies. It's us, the civilians.
Jorge Moreira da Silva from UN Ops. So what would you say to people like Dalia who've lost faith in international efforts?
Well, the Secretary General of the United Nations has been very clear, saying that international humanitarian law has been violated in Sudan, that the war rules are not being even fulfilled, because even in wars there are rules that must be fulfilled. But there was also several references about accountability. All members of the UN are accountable on the actions they take. And it's important that we all align with the Security Council resolutions. What we need is not to provide weapons to the war. What we need is to provide food, to provide shelters, to provide water, to provide basic infrastructure. So my answer to what I heard from your interview is that it's important to, rather than fueling or supporting the war, it's important that we support the peace efforts, but also raising ambition in terms of the funding. Let me give you one number that for Deutsche Welle listeners and viewers might be helpful. You know how much money is needed in terms of humanitarian aid for the people in Sudan? $4.2 billion. That's the number from the UN about the needs. You know how much money has been provided? 7%. So clearly we see the immense gap between what is the largest humanitarian crisis and the level of solidarity and generosity being put in place. I think that very often in these conversations, we use excuses from the political bottlenecks, from the lack of willingness to find a deal, to delay action on solidarity. I think that we need both.
Right.
Because if that's not the standard, why are we supporting Ukraine? Why are we supporting aid in so many countries during war? Because it's important to continue supporting the people, even during war. So Sudan cannot be facing somehow a double standard,
okay,
which is we only support Sudan once we get peace.
So here's the thing. I mean, I'm sure in their hearts, people very much agree with you. But for someone like Dalia, whom we heard from, you seem to be confirming what she said. There is no point in dealing or heeding these international bodies because they are doing very little, and they are not even keeping to their own rules. Where is the accountability for the warring sides and for the UAE and others who are fueling this war? You say there's only 7% of what is needed. You're confirming her point that these international bodies are doing next to nothing.
But look, the UN is doing a lot, because if it wouldn't be the United Nations and humanitarians, the suffering of the people would be even worse. But we are the United Nations, which means that it's not the agencies, it's the nations that are part of the United Nations. And what is important is to avoid any sense of impunity. The Secretary General has been mentioning this very often about Gaza, but also about Sudan and about so many conflicts, which is the Security Council resolutions are approved, and it's important to put that in place to guarantee that everyone fulfills the Security Council resolutions. So I cannot comment in any specific country. That's not my role, but I can agree with you and with all that says that it's important that everyone is accountable and all the Security Council resolutions are put in place. But also the Jeddah declaration. So I think it's important that people are a bit tired of declarations, of pages that are being signed. What we need is real action, right. And real action is about stopping the war, but also providing the aid to give hope to the people. I will never forget what I saw in the children's eyes when I visited the center, and they were basically asking for a future. And I know that Sudan is very far from many other countries. I know that.
That brings us to the end, dear listeners, here of on the international segment on the radar platform for this afternoon. We take a list. We actually hand over specifically to the Okundana Dingi team. And on that note, you can catch me a little bit later on today's programming, specifically on the home run. However, stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company here on your number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM.